Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trades and collected edition sales through Diamond to retailers for September 2013. We've been talking about these numbers for years and years and years, Chris. And it's you know, usually Marvel and DC at the top, and guess what? It was DC and Marvel at the top this time around. Wow, what a surprise. It was... Image had a very strong showing this time around.
Yes.
You know, we got 32.47% of the total units for the top 300 going to DC, 22.32% going to Marvel, 18.48% going to Image. So that right there is accounting for a little over 73% of the list. Add in Dark Horse, which had another 7.36% of the total units sold. And then IDW, just a hair under 5% with 4.99%. And that brings us up to about 85.62% of the overall unit sales for the top 300 trades. So Premier Publishers obviously doing pretty well. No big surprise there. They've got just a ton of items on the list. This is as much a show of strength of their backlist as anything else. Of the 91 items DC had, 69 were reorder, 22 were new. Marvel had 32 new items compared to 40 reorder items out of their 72 items. Image had 14 new items, 26 reorder items, total of 40. Dark Horse had 17 new items, only 3 reorder items for their total of 20. IDW had 10 new, 7 reorder for a total of 17. It really shows, particularly in DC's case, how just having a really strong backlist really gives you a strong showing just month after month after month on the trade side. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think a lot of that, of course, goes back towards Vertigo. Not all, but certainly a lot.
Right. I was just going to mention, it's a lot of coming out of the Vertigo line for sure, that, as it usually is. Every month we kind of see that.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of stuff that just has the longevity and stuff. And some of it just because it was just top-notch quality stuff, Sandman, Watchmen, you know, those. No, Watchmen wasn't technically Vertigo, but you know what I mean. They've got the right. Classic stuff, if you will. But then even some of their newer stuff, things like Fables, the older trades are still very relevant to what's going on in that title today, which is the same sort of dynamic that's going on with, like, Walking Dead. The stuff that happened in the first issue there is still relevant to what's going on now. Whereas with the mainstream Marvel and DC titles, so much of it has kind of flipped over, not technically in terms of continuity, although with obviously Flashpoint and the New 52, that's certainly a factor for DC. But even if the continuity is still technically the same, a lot of what was going on years ago is irrelevant to what's going on now. I think that really plays into the sales dynamic on, you know, certainly the trade side, but I think to a lesser degree also on the comic side. You know, if nothing's going to matter, why invest too much in it now for a lot of people?
It still is. I mean, talking about nostalgia, though, it still is nice to see the classic, you know, Justice League of America titles from the Silver Age and Fantastic Four, you know, from, you know, the earlier era, you know, pop up now and again and getting reprinted. I mean, before we got on the phone tonight, we talked a little bit about Hawk World. From the 1990s. So it's always fun to see the classic stuff come up and not just, you know, New 52 or the Marvel Now stuff getting churned out. But, you know, you do see comics on this list from all eras, from, you know, the Golden Age all the way on up.
What's interesting to me is you got that diversity of time span that the stories are coming from. With that, you've got the similar diversity in storytelling style. And I think some of the stuff from decades gone by and large, was a tighter, denser story structure. So I think people reading those trades are going to get a lot more out of it and therefore feel maybe they got more of their money's worth than maybe you get in a current 6-issue arc. So
That's true. Yeah.
I'm curious how that kind of plays in for people who are more on the the collected edition side of the fence. I mean, I'm so much more on the monthly side, on the comic side, that it's hard for me to really, you know, identify with that kind of buying pattern too much.
I can't disagree. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Shall we dive into the top sellers?
Yeah, you want to?
Yeah. Now, in the front runner with a pretty damn impressive lead is East of West Volume 1 Trade Paperback from Image Comics. This had a price point of $9.99, continuing kind of their habit of putting that first one out there at almost a loss leader price just to get that barrier to entry low. It did 9,258 units. That's about 4,000 plus units above the next item on the list. So not only is it a strong seller, it definitely outpaced the number two item on the list. Have you read any of East of West?
No, and you know, I was going to mention, I haven't even, I don't pay too much attention to Image Comics, mostly because I'm a collected edition guy, right? Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of saying, I'm more of the nostalgic collected edition. So more stuff coming out of Dark Horse, of course, you know, of course.
Yes.
More stuff from coming out from IDW and Marvel and DC. Whereas Image, yeah, they've been reprinting like Spawn and Savage Dragon, but not too many older titles from 20, 15 years ago. So, you know, a lot of the stuff with Image, not that I don't pay attention to their new stuff, but for some reason, this one just went over my head. I totally didn't even realize it was out until I do my feature on my blog every Friday, you know, and a bunch of guys get together and we pick out a book that have come out that week. And when this came out a few weeks ago, one of the guys who writes wrote the recommendation for East of West, and I never heard of it. And I read the blog post while I was editing it, and I'm like, how did I miss this? I've got to pick this up. And then with the New York Comic Con just going on, John, they had an East of West panel, and I guess it was just packed to the gills. Great stuff coming out of the panel. Everybody loves this title, and I think this is the next big thing from Image.
Well, and they've got a couple of next big things coming out of Image right now. Certainly this, Saga, you know, they've got a number of others that I think are quieter, longer-term hits, like Mind the Gap, Morning Glories, stuff like that. There's a lot of great stuff coming out from Image. This was one that I picked up the first issue, and it was good, but not something that really hooked me, so I didn't stay with it. Drew suggested we do number 5, so I picked up 2, 3, 4, and 5, read those. It's great stuff. It's just telling a story that I personally don't feel heavily invested in, but I can definitely see how it is clicking and why it's clicking with people that are more into kind of that genre, that storytelling style, that, you know, stuff. And again, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, for me personally, not something I feel that, you know, a strong urge to read on a monthly basis. And this is one of those
That's fair. Yeah.
Well, it's one of those, for me, what I think a lot of people are liking about it is it's its own narrative universe, which is really cool and really well done. But for me, stuff can stay on my list of lesser quality because if it's tied into a bigger narrative universe that I'm more entrenched in. And it's one of those that self-contained versus part of a shared universe, there are pros and cons. People are on different sides of that fence, and, you know, there's stuff for everybody out there, I guess. And again, I expect East of West to be around for a while. And certainly with strong sales like this, we may get to the point where, you know, Kirkman is not the linchpin creator at Image, you know, at some point down the line. We're a ways from that.
Right.
But, I mean, you're actually starting to get some strong titles out there.
Yeah, I was just very when I got the spreadsheet from you the other day, and I opened it up just to glance at it, and I saw that it was number one at 9,258 copies, and we'll go down the list in a minute, but just seeing what it beat out and how much it beat out the other titles, that's what was amazing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The next item on the list, Justice League Volume 3, Throne of Atlantis hardcover. 5,226 units, so it's a difference of over 4,000 units there.
Yeah.
Also the difference between a $10 trade paperback and a $25 hardcover, so that's part of it there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because between that volume with the hardcover, a couple items down at rank 6, we got the Volume 2 trade paperback of Justice League, Villain's Journey, 4,589 units. Then further down at rank 17, we got Shazam Volume 1 hardcover, which is reprinting issues of Justice League. That did 3,239 units. And then I think somewhere even further down the list, we've got the first volume of Justice League. Yeah, that's down at rank 97 with another 1,071 units of reorder activity. But just about the entire run of the new 52 Justice League seems to have come out or been either released or re-released during September, which I just find kind of humorous. You know, obviously, some people are going to want everything in hardcover. Some are going to want it all in trade. Some, you know, may not want any of it.
Right.
But, you know, with Justice League being kind of the one of the main front runners on the monthly side, with Batman beating it out and stuff, but still sustaining well over the 100,000 mark, for it to have fallen so far short of how East of West did is kind of surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the monthly side, how is East of West doing? Let me go pull that up real quick. Provided it had an issue.
Well, I'm glad they... Just talking real quick about the Shazam book, I'm really glad that they did collect it. And I mean, not only because they will collect it, but I kind of... I read most of the comics digitally. Mm-hmm. And you know, I take it and then I, you know, file them away or do whatever I do with them. And just reading the Shazam backups, I kind of got lost because, and reading the solicitation again, it collects the backups from Justice League 7 through 11, the Zero issue, 14 through 16, and 18 through 21. So it isn't, you know, it's not a consistent 7 through 21. I mean, there are some gaps in there. And that's what kind of lost me throughout this. And so I'm glad they have it all in one edition. I'm sure they're going to have a trade of it. And then, you know, you can read the entire story without any gaps, which is nice.
So, yeah, the Shazam story, I think, just went on too long, too slow in the backup feature and such. So I think reading it in a single sitting will work better for a lot of people. East of West, though, by the way, is doing around 33,380 units on the monthly side, which compared to how Justice League has typically been doing, let me go pull that up, which is, again, like I said, well over the 100,000 mark for the most part. Dipped a little below that with issues 20 and 21. It's interesting to see it just really, you know, have such a pronounced lead ahead of that hardcover, you know, on the collected edition side.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... Again, Image has got some strong titles coming out, and I think it could be a bit of a game changer over the next couple of years, depending how stuff goes over at DC. Because I do think there's a certain risk that DC is taking right now with the playing the shared universe card as strongly as they're doing right now. They've got Forever Evil going on. They did the Villain Month stuff. They've got Batman Zero Year. They've got what else? They've got something else going on.
Well, all the Green Lantern books.
Yeah, the Lights Out, you know, stuff. That kind
the Lights
of
Out, right, yeah. So, and then, you know, that whole Justice League Dark with Constantine, and they still have Pandora going on, don't they? Isn't that still running?
They've got that going on, but it's getting to where I think it's going to be harder and harder for a DC fan to find a more self-contained book.
Yeah.
And I think that could push people away from DC, and if they're looking for more self-contained stuff, I mean, Image excels at that. They've got a lot of
that's what I wanted to ask you. If is this month for what are we doing? September?
Yeah.
any final issues for the DC 52 coming down in September, or are we all the books are ongoing still?
Technically, I suppose, depending how you look at it, all of them ended. Because this was the Villain Month stuff, which if you look at it as if it was Zod number one and stuff like that.
Okay, you're right. Okay.
But realistically, no, none of them really ended, but a couple skipped.
Okay, right. Because Nightwing didn't have a book out this month.
Yeah, yeah. All
right.
It made the number crunching actually this time a real challenge because there were all the 2D, 3D cover variants. There were just all the point whatever issue numbers, whereas in the past I could kind of, you know, oh, there's only one or two, it's not a big deal. there were, you know, 104 on the list this time around, because all the 52 of the 3D, all 52 of the 2D covers showed up, so I had to deal with some of that and a few other things. It was an interesting month on the comic side, that's for sure. But I think, you know, there are going to be a couple of titles ending and stuff, but really what I noticed in that regard was the villain month seemed to interrupt a number of ongoing storylines. So I would expect when things get collected for Batgirl, for the Superman storyline going on, and a few others, Aquaman, they're going to just do 23, 24, 25, or, you know, whatever, and just, you know, do something else for collecting the villain issues.
Right. I think they are too. Yeah. I know that Giant hardcover coming out at Christmas time, it won't collect every single villain issue either.
Why not?
They can't throw them all in there. It's going to be too big if they do it, I guess.
Didn't they do that for the number ones?
Yeah, but that came down from DC itself, that everything will not be collected in the Giant oversized book. A few issues will be left out for whatever reason. I don't know. Maybe they're going to go back in there and rethink it and redo it. But the initial press release, it's not a press release. It was an interview of sorts. But yeah, it's not going to collect the entire run of all the point villain issues for whatever reason. I don't know.
That's just surprising. It seems like a missed opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But yeah.
That's their choice. They can collect it how they see fit.
That's right.
Well, going back to the trades side, what I find interesting is at ranks 7 and 8, we've got two trade paperbacks. We've got Saga Volume 1 followed by Volume 2. These are, of course, Reorder Activity, Volume 1 doing 4,303 units, Volume 2 of Saga doing 4,263 units. This is, again, another title they've got out there that's doing very well both on the monthly side and on the trade side. You know, it wasn't that long ago where really it was either Walking Dead or, you know, not a whole lot on the trade side for Image. But now they've got a number of things that are placing, again, like I said, high on the monthly side and now high on the trades list. That's very good for Image. I don't think they're at risk of Kirkman jumping ship or anything, but the fact that they've got other titles that are helping support that bottom line and stuff, I think is just a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Over at IDW, top seller for them, rank number 9, My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, Volume 2, Trade Paperback, 4,169 units. That beat out the hardcover for Superior Spider-Man, Volume 1, which did 4,002 estimated units. So I think some of these publishers are on the right track when they're going after properties that are geared towards a younger audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're seeing IDW having good success with that. We're seeing Boom have good success with Adventure Time. I think these are a more loyal fan base for the properties. They'd probably go with the property if the property were to switch publishers or whatever. But I think there's some logic to be had there. I think the more classic comic book readers, which I would consider both of us to be kind of part of that group, I think we've, based on the sales figures I'm seeing, gotten a bit jaded. You know, we're not coming out in the quantities we used to on either the monthly or the trade side.
John, do you listen to Howard Stern?
No.
I sometimes listen to him on my way to work, and I caught this the other day. It was last Friday. And on Friday, he does a weekly recap. So it was earlier in the week, actually, he was talking about this. But somehow they got on the subject of My Little Pony. And sure enough, some guy called in and said that this is a caller calling in, right? Mm-hmm. That he has many comic book friends that collect My Little Pony and My Little Pony figurines and My Little Pony this, that, and the other thing. That this is a more of an adult male audience. And I wonder if that, you know, if there's some, there must be some truth to that, I imagine. But, you know, we're always trying to think of a younger audience, but this book is somehow crossing over into the adult male audience. And I wonder if you've come across that at all.
I have a female coworker who's got a surprising number of the little My Little Pony figurines or whatever on her desk. So as far as an adult female audience, I can say, okay, yeah, I believe that. I'm not going to say there's not a male one either. I really know nothing about this property other than it's based on a cartoon.
Me too.
And that's it.
That's it.
But, you know, really, yes, I was making some perhaps naive assumptions as to the age of the readership on these things. Certainly, even if it's just for kids, we're seeing these sales through comic book stores, which at the very least means the parents getting the kid to the comic store, picking the comic up for them. So right. I think there's an adult component built into this sales figure, certainly. But hell, if adults are reading it, that's cool too. The bottom line
it's
is
fine.
It's selling. It's a top 10 trade, you know, and it was selling again, like I said, better than Superior Spider-Man. Better than Green Lantern Rise of the Third Army hardcover with 3,344 units. Better than Morning Glory's volume 5 trade paperback at 3,260 units. I mean, better than the Age of Ultron hardcover with 3,007 units. So
that's what really surprised me this month, how low Age of Ultron was.
It's a $75.
I mean, it is $75 bucks. It is. It's $75. Yeah. But, yeah, that seems a little low for me, though.
I think it seems a little high, particularly given the price tag. I think kicking that out as a $75 book was a mistake.
Okay.
I think doing a $75 book version of it, okay, that makes sense, but not initially. You know, this is something that the 10 issues, they could have done this as a nice trade or whatever, done it for literally half the price of this, gotten the fans who'd skipped it for whatever reason very happy, gotten the stuff out there, and then come out with a nice bookshelf edition or something. But I think at $75 for 10 issues or whatever, does it have anything more than just the 10? Because I don't think it does.
I think it's got a few crossover issues or like a, you know, do you have your solicit in here somewhere?
It's got like 10 other issues in there. So, okay.
Yeah.
That makes it a little bit more worth the price, but still not $75.
Yeah, it's got the Avengers Assemble, the Fantastic Four, Fearless Defenders, a few other issues, yeah.
And it was a fun story. So when I say it shouldn't have been $75, I don't mean that as any kind of a comment on the quality of the story. I think they are doing their readers and potential readers a disservice by kicking out a premium edition of this first. I think they should have gone for the mass market or, you know, more widespread sales and then gone for the high-end edition. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I can see both, you know, because I'm trying to remember what they did with Civil War. I don't think Civil War was $75 when it came out. I think it was more of like a $49.99 book when it came out, and that was loaded. And, you know, maybe Marvel is just packing more and more into it and more than they need to. And I think that's what you're kind of alluding to, maybe.
More than they need to. I think if they had just done the 10 issues of it as a good trade paperback and gotten it out there at a fair price, I think that would have done them more good than loading it up at a higher price point. Because with Infinity already in full swing, Age of Ultron feels like it was a while ago. Longer than it was, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, totally.
And I think if they had done a lower price point version of it, they would have gotten it into more hands and therefore get more discussion about it, and it would seem more relevant, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also following up with another, you know, something like Infinity so quickly after it also kind of pushed it to the background prematurely.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think it's not like they, you know, if it had just been a hardcover versus a trade, kind of like how they're doing the Justice League hardcover first, then trade, you know, 6 months later or what have you. You know, that, I'm not going to say that's right or wrong. It's not to my preference or whatever, but really I don't care because I don't get either. But that kind of double dipping is kind of standard practice, regardless of which is first. It's going for the really high end $75, $100 type editions first. That seems a little predatory to a degree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
So I think it's short-sighted. They're more likely to get people to buy multiple editions, frankly, if they had a cheaper one and then a really nice version.
Mm-hmm.
But once somebody gets the $75 book, they're done with Age of Ultron. That's it. They're not going to buy any other version. So.
No.
And if they didn't buy the issues and they turn down this version, they've already turned down the thing multiple times, so when it comes into a trade, again, it'll be that much further down the line, it'll seem like that much older news and therefore irrelevant, and it'll hurt the sales of the trade. So
I didn't even read, I read Age of Ultron, but I didn't read any of the tie-in issues, though, like Fantastic Four or Defenders or Wolverine. I mean, I just kind of stuck with the core title. I mean, I remember reading Thunderbolts, because I pick up Thunderbolts, and it really had nothing to do with the overall story. You know, they slapped that Thunderbolts, 14 AU sticker on there, and then, it becomes part of it. And that's what always, you know, we've talked about that before. What is a true crossover? What should they be including? What shouldn't they be including? You know, and you really don't find out until the $75 hardcover is solicited, you know?
Even then, I think they're just putting in what they feel they want to put in, not what's really integral to the story.
Yeah, right.
So you don't know until you've read it what was actually worth reading.
Right. And then how it all, the continuity aspect of it.
How it all fits together, or if it all fits together.
Yeah.
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 Sometimes the jury, you know, never really comes to a conclusion on that. It's kind of a hung jury sometimes. So, see, we've got a couple other things here from Image that's kind of interesting. We've got the first trade paperback for Five Ghosts. It ranked 26. That did 2,453 units. That collects the first five issues of the five-issue miniseries that's gotten extended to an ongoing.
That is a great series, by the way. That Image series I did read. I was really, really happy with that. Very cool.
I liked it. I enjoyed it a lot. I think they could have done a better job explaining the concept of a literary ghost.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious where they're going to take the series going forward. And I think doing a one-shot issue with number six is a smart move. And then we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But I can definitely see how it got extended.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see if they're going to add in other literary ghosts throughout the years.
Yeah. Is it just the five? Are there others?
Yeah, right. Or others. I mean, could they do, top of my head, could they do Morley from Scrooge or something like that? You know what I mean?
They could. I don't know how much use he would be.
It doesn't have to be a supernatural Sherlock Holmes type ghost. You know, it could be a regular literary ghost.
I think there are others that could be done. You could have the knight, you know, like a King Arthur type.
Yes.
You could do the jungle lord or whatever, you know, Tarzan.
Mm-hmm.
You could do...
I don't know. I think some could play around with it a big time. So.
Some kind of Western character. I mean, they could easily do another couple of ghosts. And it would be interesting to find somebody else who's been similarly cursed or whatever, but with different ghosts.
Yeah, that'd be really cool, too.
So, see, another trade paperback from Image down at rank 74 is Five Weapons, making the grade. Did 1,251 units. And then the one that I find really interesting is down at rank 106, Cyber Force Rebirth Volume 1 trade paperback. It did 989 units. Now, that's a $9.99 trade paperback. That's collecting the first five issues that were pretty much given away for free because of the Kickstarter thing. And the sixth issue came out this month also. And it's interesting because I really don't think you could do a better job kind of launching a new series than by giving away the first story arc for free. But, you know, we'll see how that title does for them just moving forward from there. But, I mean, those are a number of, in that case, you know, Five Weapons was a miniseries, Five Ghosts was a miniseries extended to an ongoing. They've got a number of things going on these days that are really, you know, clicking with people over at Image, and those are just a few.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we rank 36, we've got the first volume of the Arrow trade paperback. This is the stuff that is collecting the issues that were collecting the digital stories that are based on the TV show, which, of course, is based on the comic. And it did 1,939 units, which for the third, you know, dip in, or whatever for the material, that's really not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think they might have been hoping for more. I think between how the comics are doing and how the trades are doing, they're rethinking how they're collecting this stuff. And I think their decision has been to end the monthly books and then to just continue with the trades, which kind of makes sense. I think the triple dipping was a little excessive. But
is that what they're going to do with Arrow? They're going to cut out the monthly?
I believe so.
Oh, I missed it. Okay.
I think they're doing it for a number of their digital first books.
Interesting.
I know they've marked the end of, I think it was Smallville, Injustice Gods Among Us, and one or two others. But, I mean, it's over a year into this whole digital first foray for DC, and they've gone pretty deep into that area with a new thing a day, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact they're rethinking, you know, at this point, how they, reprint it or collect it in print editions and stuff, not too surprising. The fact that they're still continuing on the digital side, I see as a very promising sign in terms of having that venue, that revenue stream, actually fund content creation. And some of the stuff that's going digital first, great stuff. I think people are really missing the boat if they're skipping some of these things. Specifically the Injustice Gods Among Us series. That's just been phenomenal. Let's see. Over at Valiant, we've got Harbinger Wars at rank 56, and then Harbinger Volume 3, Harbinger Wars, at rank 73. The Harbinger War miniseries collected into trade, 1,462 units. The Harbinger side of the whole crossover thing, that trade doing 1,266 units. Are you reading any of the Valiant stuff these days?
I read everything Valiant. I awesome. Love it all. I think it's great stuff. And if anybody has not picked up Valiant, they really, really should. It's just, you know, and there's something for everybody. There really, really is. And I keep on going back and forth for what my favorite title is. Because every time I read Shadow Man, I love the dark and brooding story. And then, you know, I read Quantum and Woody and laugh my head off. And then I like the adventure and the conflict that Exo Manowar has to bring.
I'm really enjoying Archer and Armstrong a lot.
Archer, same with Archer and Armstrong. Absolutely, yeah.
But yeah, every and book now, there has a distinct...
Eternal Warrior is out, so...
Well, yeah, that just started up too. And they've got Ninjak coming out soon also.
Oh, I can't wait for that. That's going to be great.
Now, they've got a good lineup, and each book kind of stands unique in that lineup. You know, there's definite overlap and some cross-continuity, but not to the point where... If you get one, you feel you have to get the others. So they're doing a good job with their shared universe. One of the big ticket items is down at rank 67. That's the Uncanny X-Men Omnibus Volume 1 hardcover. This is reorder activity. 1,335 units, and that's a $99.99 price tag on that. So not too bad sales for that. That was actually one of the better grossing items this month. Just based on that price tag.
There's a heavy demand for that book. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Understandable. But still, somewhat a little surprising at the $100 price point, too. I mean, I buy a ton of comics, and some weeks that would be more than I'm spending on comics.
Mm-hmm. So oh, yeah.
That's part of why I don't do too much on the trade and the graphic novel side, is you know, one item hitting, and suddenly, you know, my weekly expenditure is like double what it normally would have been. So...
Can you explain, I know you explained it recently, John, but I'm looking at rank 130.
Yep.
And that is the Conan Red Nails Original Art Archives, which basically is like an artist edition from a company called Genesis West. It did 855 units, $120, and it got the number one position in the retail rank. And I'm just wondering why that would be.
Okay. The way the retail rank...
Explain that to me again.
Certainly, certainly. The retail rank is how the items rank based on the invoiced amount.
The invoiced amount, okay.
From a more naive perspective or simpler perspective, take the sales figure, multiply it by the price, and then rank in descending order. So the person who brought in the most is on top. Obviously, it favors items with higher price tags over those with lower price tags.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I believe, the highest price tag item on the list this time around. I take that back. It's the second highest. There's an item with a $125 price tag, which is the Iron Man by Kurt Busiek and Sean Chen Omnibus down at rank 192.
Okay.
But this did substantially more in sales. Again, this did 855 units compared to the 612 units for that Iron Man Omnibus. Between the big price tag, the sales, it was pretty much the top grossing. Now, I say that's a naive approach to it. Why do I say that?
Okay.
because that's the extended price. And what did I say this was based on? The invoiced amount. If we go to, let's go down to rank 293. There's an item here with a retail ranking of 1854. Now, granted, it's a $4.99 price tag, so that's part of it. But it's also a matter of, you know, was this something that was substantially discounted? There are cases where you will see an item between two other items of the same price tag. And if it's got the same price tag, it's got something that's sold a little above, a little below it, its retail rank ought to be between those other two. And if it's not, that's usually indicative of it having been sold through Diamond at a better discount. That kind of makes sense?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And a couple of times we've seen items on the list down at the bottom that just have insanely high retail rankings because they were part of a progressive sale, you know, 75 off this week, 80 off next week, 85% off the week after, when they're just blowing stuff out the door. So,
okay.
Looking at the retail ranking there is interesting. But yes, that's why that was the number one item by retail, is just, again, it was, it sold decently and it was expensive. So,
cool.
What else do we got around here? We got a ton of Marvel Masterworks this time around.
Yeah, they tend to blow those out every few months. It seems like that, you know, we've seen a lot of those on the list before.
Yeah.
So
I don't seem to hear as much buzz around the Masterworks these days. Is that just because I'm not listening, or because there's not much buzz?
Well, you know, they kind of slowed it down. You know, they'll be reaching what, number 200 come November, I believe, November or December. So that's a lot of books, but they're still going strong. But it's funny you mentioned the Marvel Masterworks because out of New York Comic Con, they mentioned the Miracle Man reissue of whatever they're going to do, you know. Presumably, it is going to be the Miracle Man from who's that guy? Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman, and they're going to finish up the Neil Gaiman story because he had number 25, and then they're going to have a new ongoing of Miracle Man. But in the press release, they mentioned that they will be using the same techniques as they do with their Marvel Masterworks program, which means it's going to have white, shiny, glossy paper, which people may not like. They might want the old newsprint paper, more indicative of the DC Omnibus line.
Mm-hmm.
So there's bound to be some controversy when it comes out, but it's coming out. Don't know when. It might even be solicited for January. I have no idea, but I'm sure they're going to have some kind of giant omnibus. I'm sure it's going to be like a, you know, a bunch of trade paperbacks. It's going to be a nice evergreen title, a lot like we see with Watchmen on the DC side of things. So I'm sure it'll be in print from now until the end of eternity.
I think once it gets in print, Marvel would be foolish to let it go out of print.
Yes.
The question I have is it really going to do gangbusters, or is it something that because it was 25 issues done so long ago and has been impossible to find to a degree, you know, between now and then, if a lot of the newer people to comics just are wondering what the big deal is, and are they going to go find out what the big deal is or not? You know what I mean?
No, I agree. And they've waited so long. I mean, one thing with Watchmen, DC has kept it around. You know, they made a movie about it. They had prequel comics to it. And I think that we will see the same thing for Marvel and Marvel Man.
Yeah. I think now that they've got the property, getting it out there and stuff, I mean, once they got it, they're going to keep their hands firmly on it and keep it in print just as in support of that.
Yeah.
They would be foolish not to.
Right. I mean, they could even do the Kirkman model, you know, that Kirkman does with Walking Dead, and just get it out there every way possible, you know, including the board game. You know, I mean, they got to make money off their investment. I mean, who knows how much they paid for all this stuff to settle all the lawsuits and everything, but it's probably well worth their time to do so. And, you know, maybe they can even do a Miracle Man movie or something. You know, it's going to be around, and just this is just the beginning.
Yeah, I think that the marketplace and the audience has changed so much since it was first done that to expect continuing the story is going to have the same level of success it would have had back in the day. I mean, it very well may. I'm not saying it can't or it won't. It just seems like it's not necessarily the surefire hit that you know, people might expect it to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Steve Rude was bringing back Nexus and stuff. People were all excited about that and, you know, thought it was just going to sell through the roof or something. And it was great stuff, but didn't really sell through the roof. You
right.
know, again, the audience has changed. The marketplace has changed. I mean, I hope for success on these things, but, you know, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Well, it all depends on what you want. You know, I mean, you can just like Watchmen, which I think it's a valid comparison, not only because of Moore, but because it is one of these titles that have, you know, has been talked about so much and hyped up so much over time. But you're right. I mean, a lot of people don't know what exactly it all is, especially even going back to its real roots way back in the late 40s, early 50s,
mm-hmm.
And how much that was a ripoff of Captain Marvel, and how, you know, Captain Marvel was a ripoff of Superman. I mean, it all comes back to Superman in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So,
well,
interesting.
I think the Watchmen comparison is spot on, just because, again, they were released around the same time, mm-hmm. similar sensibilities and such, similar kind of darker take on superheroes and whatnot. But that's become almost so standard practice these days that it'll be hard for that sort of material to stand out as much today as it did mm-hmm. back then. You know, you look over at Sidekick from Image, which is a very kind of a dark take on the whole, you know, Sidekick phenomenon or whatnot. And, you know, back in the 80s or whatever, that would have been just, you know, cutting edge or something like that. These days, it's just another title,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Do you own any Miracle Man?
Yeah, I think I've got the full run.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Of everything?
I think so. Give me a sec to pull up, not obviously the 40 stuff, but the Eclipse run.
The Eclipse run and the Warrior run.
I don't think I've got the Warrior run. I think I've just got what Eclipse did, the 25 issues or whatnot.
Okay. That was one of my questions I was going to pose to you was, do you think by reissuing this stuff that we're going to see a price increase, you know, in auctions on eBay for Miracle Man even higher? Will there be a demand for the original issues?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think not as much as if this had happened sooner before the advent of digital trades, etc., but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see. I've got the 24-issue run that Eclipse did from 1985, the 3-issue Apocryphilla one from 1991, and the 2-issue Miracle Man Family from 1988. So I don't have any of the Warrior stuff, but pretty much I think I've got everything Eclipse did.
Yeah.
And do I expect that there'll be renewed interest in that because of this? Certainly.
Yeah.
I think there's a contingent of today's readers that really couldn't care less about back issues, but I think there's also a contingent of readers that's going to be very much, you know, if they don't already have it, go hunt it down.
Mm-hmm.
The question is how much of that section already has it, you know?
Right. I'll tell you right now, and I think I've told you before, is I went out because I wanted to read it, you know, back, I think I got it like 5 years ago, was I downloaded a digital copy of it because it was mm-hmm. out there and there's no other way. Now, when it comes out in hardcover or trade or whatever from Marvel in a nice format, I will be the first in line to get it because I can't wait to actually have it in my hands and have a, you know, much better copy than some scanned digital, you know, because it's not, but the copies I have are just scanned PDFs. They're not very good. So
okay,
I'll be much happier with a hardcover.
In light of the conversation we had around Age of Ultron, when mm-hmm. they collect this initially, do you think they would be better off doing a high-end edition, you know, nice bookshelf, omnibus, you know, absolute sort of a thing, or trade paperback and just get the material out there into hands?
I think, knowing Marvel, I think they're going to do a nice oversized hardcover for 100, you know, 125, or even do the, like they did with the Stephen King Dark Tower slipcase,
mm-hmm.
you know, two copies. $150. I think they're gonna get it out there, and then after that, they'll get it all out in whatever format they need to.
I agree. That's probably what they're gonna do. Do you think that's what they should do?
Yeah. You know, I really don't think it matters because I really think they're gonna get it out in every single format.
I'm just thinking.
Yeah.
This is material that's, you know, nearly 30 years old now.
Yeah.
So it's older than many readers of comics, certainly not all, certainly maybe not even most, but getting it out there in a trade paperback format at a lower price point where you can get it in more hands, get more people aware of it, talking about it, and then go back for that nice high-end edition when you've got a bigger audience that appreciates the material.
Yeah.
Seems like it could be a winning strategy.
Oh, I think so, too. I think we've seen that with DC and Dark Horse, too. We've seen them issue hardcover and trade paperback same day and date.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I think it would be smart for Marvel to do, a trade first. Because, guys like you and me and the higher-end collectors, we are going to get the hardcover. We are going to get the slipcase, right? We're the buyer for that. You look at the list, for these higher end books, how many books did, what was that Red Nails book? And that was, 800 something, for the Red Nails, the Iron Man, but how many was for the Busick 600 you said?
612.
Yeah. I mean, there's only going to be a certain number of, no one's going to go out and buy the $125 Miracle Man hardcover, 3,000 copies. I don't see that happening. Maybe 1,000, you never know. But if you get the trade paperback out there, easily 5,000 copies.
I guess I'm thinking about it in terms of the Kirkman model of you get the monthly issues out, low-cost investment, people can get hooked on that. They're not on that. You can get them on the trade, which is a low-cost, easy way to get that. And if they like the monthly enough, they may also get the trade. But then once you've got enough in the trades, you can get to the hardcover and kind of build up the emotional investment in the stories as you release the more and more glitzier high-end editions. And therefore, you've got a bigger audience to support those.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you do the big splash, go with the high-end edition, and then go for the cheaper one later on, by the time that people read the cheaper one, get aware of what the material is, if they don't already know, and let's face it, with Miracle Man, they probably don't in many cases. Mm-hmm. They're certainly not going to spend the money on a high-end edition.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree. I mean, there's different ways to do it. I mean, you can bring out the $75 Age of Ultron first, or you can do what DC has done in the past. I remember when they brought out the Alex Ross. Not Kingdom Come. It was the other Alex Ross Justice League book.
Justice.
Was it Justice? Yeah. They brought it out in hardcover. Then they brought it out in trade. Then they brought it out in the Absolute Edition.
Well, and even with those are all based on a comic that came out just a year or two prior.
True. Yeah, right.
I think the big point here for me is since Miracle Man's been pretty much impossible to get for the last, 20, 30 years getting it into hands in new readers first and then doing the higher edition seems like the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But, we'll see what they do. We'll see how it goes.
I wish you and I were the publisher.
Frankly, at times, I'm glad we're not. These are tough decisions for those guys. And it's easy for us to kind of armchair quarterback and then say, oh, they did it wrong. They're taking the risk,
right.
And I respect that. I'm not saying I got all the answers here. I got a lot of questions, got a lot of possibilities, got some thoughts, got some ideas, and sometimes what they do works out, sometimes not so much.
Well, and with that, you wonder what kind of DVD extra special stuff they're going to throw in their hardcover too. How many pages that's going to take up?
Yeah,
because there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot of essays they can throw in there if they want to. There's a lot of bonus material that they can dig up and put in there and talk to different creators and find out what Miracle Man have meant to them over the years. And, maybe it's funny. And all weekend long, John, Neil Gaiman, right?
Yeah.
I didn't see one mention of Alan Moore, not once. And I had, I got on the Twitter with George Corey, who is a fellow writer of mine. I think, George, he writes for Back Issue, and he's done an Alan Moore book. And I wrote George, I'm like, is it just the Neil Gaiman stuff, or are they gonna do the Alan Moore? Because there's no mention of Alan Moore. And he's like, no, they're going to do Alan Moore as well. They have to. They can't have one without the other, really.
Yeah.
But it was just funny that they never mentioned his name once in any press release that I saw.
I can understand that. Mentioning Alan Moore's name in a press release is like playing with fire at a fireworks factory or something.
Yeah, right.
Things could explode. It could be very pretty. It could be very wonderful. It could be very deadly.
Yeah.
I think it depends what mood he wakes up in or something. If I were at Marvel right now, the way I would be tempted to put the material out there, do the low-cost trade paperbacks to get it into multiple hands. In parallel, work with IDW, get some artist edition stuff going out there. Get the, ooh, wow, this is the brilliant art of. Also, work, and I'm thinking Avatar is who you might need to work with. They seem to be the only people at times that have good connections with Alan Moore. Get a writer's edition out of Alan Moore out of this, as you get one from Neil Gaiman as well. Kind of, this is the what we were thinking sorts of stuff. Build up the mystique on this is brilliant material, this is, you know, whatever. And that would bake in a certain amount of enhanced sales for the trade. Then once you've got all that out there and there's all this wow, it's great, then you do the really premier, you know, collected edition in the hardcover format, slipcase, you know, all the nine yards or whatever.
So. Can you remind me again what Todd McFarlane's angle was in all this?
He bought out Eclipse.
Okay.
And
all right.
He thought that meant he got ownership of all of this.
Okay.
My understanding is the ownership was split between Eclipse and the creators did some kind of bizarre hand-me-down scheme. As they left it, their ownership got handed off to the next guy or something. Which, you know,
and then Mick Anglo got in on it too, because he is the original creator of Marvel Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so there's enough lawsuits for everybody, basically.
Well, hell, somebody ought to have a really good book come out of this as to how it all got squared away.
Oh, I'd love to see that. That would be awesome. Yeah.
Hell, if Tomorrow's isn't working on something like that, you should suggest they do that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because this has been one of the bigger, you know, legal quagmires of comics.
Yes,
and I'm curious
absolutely.
Where some of the other material kind of landed in the process. It's too bad Marvel is not structured such that some of these other properties that they've gotten either from Malibu or you know, CrossGen or some of the other libraries they've kind of bought up over the years, that there's no good way to kind of get those back out into the marketplace under a non-Marvel umbrella, I guess would be the way I want to put that. And they tried to get CrossGen back out there at one point. They even tried to get the new universe and stuff out there. But
yeah.
I think more of a Marvel Knights disconnected from the main office approach is almost what they would need to do for some of these things.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So what else we got out there that looks interesting?
I got
not
one. Much. I mean, did we touch on the first Star Wars book up at rank 3?
No, we did not. We can touch on
well,
that.
Well, I was just going to mention that because I thought, you know, doing the image model of $9.99, I thought having Star Wars, the Shadow of Yavin, which did a very respectable 5,193 copies, come out at $19.99 was awfully high for a trade paperback. I thought they could, you know, put the Walmart price on it at $9.99 or $14.99 and probably sell a little bit more, and they probably, it would be, you know, nothing for them to do, really, for to make more of a profit on it, because it will sell.
But
so
I think
I just thought
that's
that was
why
a,
they
did awfully high price trade paperback for what it is.
I think your point of that will sell. It's Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's Dark Horse on
no,
Star
I agree.
Wars.
Yeah.
The reason I think Image does the lower price point is they're getting new properties
it's
out
Alex
there.
It's Alex Ross in the covers. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a much bigger built-in audience for Star Wars than there is for East of West that nobody's heard of prior to it launching. Because it didn't
right.
exist. So, but it's going to be interesting over the next year or so, because I think they've got at least another 8 months to a year of the license left at Dark Horse for Star Wars, possibly longer. I don't know. But when
right.
that leaves,
yeah, they're kind of keeping that under wraps. Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. I certainly don't blame them.
Yeah.
But when it leaves, it'll be interesting to see how that property does in comic book format, because Dark Horse has done a great job with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Marvel, by and large, doesn't have the world's best track record for licensed properties. You know, they're doing okay with the famous author stuff, but it's not really lighting up the charts for the most part. I mean, there are some exceptions, but
well, you just have to wonder, you know, if and I'm going with the assumption that Marvel and Disney will get back the Star Wars license. Okay,
mm-hmm.
If you go with that assumption, I'm assuming that the Marvel run of Star Wars from the 1970s and early 80s will get reprinted through Marvel Disney. However, I don't know what happens to the Dark Horse Star Wars properties. Does Marvel Disney get to reprint that, or will Dark Horse retain the rights to that? I have no idea.
I would expect, not knowing how the contracts are written, which obviously is what decides all this, that Marvel would probably have the ability to reprint them, but have to kick out a certain percentage back to Dark Horse or something, maybe?
Which when you have Lucas and Disney and Marvel, I think they could afford that. Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, that's how many billions of dollars is that? And all they got to do is write a check and just say, here, Dark Horse, we'll print these from now on. Here's a little money for your troubles. it's that much money. It's ridiculous.
I would expect it to be more a residuals or a percentage of the sales or some such. But
yeah,
hell, if I were on the Marvel Disney side of the fence on this one, I would certainly do that and basically take over the reprinting of everything they've got, keep the Dark Horse, logo name on the inside or whatever, but rebrand the stuff in a common, trade dress or something under whatever banner they want to put it under for the new stuff. Mm-hmm. Lucas Comics or, whatever. They probably couldn't do that.
Yeah, but something.
Yeah.
Because everything has to go through Lucas. That's we know that for a fact. Dark Horse just can't write something. They've got to get permission through Lucas to do it all.
Right.
And
right.
I think that even has to do with continuity and characters. And, they just can't go, do something with Luke Skywalker or, even with new characters. It's all vetted through Lucas or Lucas books or film or whatever.
The Lucas Company of some sort. Yeah.
The Lucas Company. Yes.
And I think that's one of the strengths of the property is its continuity and consistency because of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think some of the other properties have really kind of lost their way.
Mm-hmm.
But, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. Because I'm enjoying what Dark Horse has been doing. I don't read as much as I used to, but at one point I was whole hog in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. If it goes over to Marvel, and that seems to be the end game at this point, I'm uncertain how well they'll do with the property, They've done some decent stuff before in terms of licensed properties, but they've also done some real not-so-good stuff. Their run on the Star Trek stuff was lackluster at best.
So. Oh, yeah, for sure. But that's all I got. That's what I just want to touch on, was a little bit of Star Wars.
Other thing I want to mention, down at rank 232, we've got the Scott Pilgrim Color Hardcover Volume 1 reorder activity, 517 units. At one point, we were thinking these things could have been something of an evergreen on the list. This is not the case. Those have kind of started to play out. This one made it on the list this time, but at one point we were seeing the full run of Scott Pilgrim.
Mm-hmm.
So it did okay, but again, not the evergreen we were hoping that stuff might have been able to turn into.
And that's just the first volume of what's 5 or 6 that they're going to do?
First volume of 6 that they have done.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's that's the thing, a good movie or whatever can certainly put something into the limelight, but it takes a lot more than that to keep it in the public mind, keep it on the store shelves, keep the interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
Which goes back to my concern with Miracle Man of having not had that advantage for the last few decades. How's it going to do when it comes back into the market?
Right.
So.
Time will tell.
Yep. So the two big price points this time around, 52 items at $14.99, 49 items at $19.99, but that only accounts for about a third of the list. All sorts of crazy price points this time around. We had a lot. those are the two main ones. $24.99 was popular with 23 items, 21 items at $16.99, 14 at $9.99. We had, again, the one at $125, another at $120, another at $99.99, another at $75. And we had one down at $3.99, another down at $4.99. So pretty much, like I said, all over the place this time around. But pretty good month at the top of the list, again, with that strong debut of the trade paperback for East of West. But, really, before we got out of the top 40, we were below 2,000 units on a trade-by-trade basis or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty standard fare. So that's about all I got for this time around. What do you got coming up on your show?
Well, I think I'm going to talk about more a little bit about Miracle Man and a little bit about the artist editions that were announced by IDW at New York Comic Con. A lot of great stuff.
Yeah, quite a few artist editions. I was surprised.
Oh my gosh, Jim Steranko's Nick Fury, and then also Nick Fury and Captain America. So that is very cool. But I think I'm most excited about the Watchmen artist edition. I think that's going to be great. But yeah, so many coming up. And then at the end of October, if you're in the Detroit area, I will be at the Detroit Fan Fair, and I will be hosting the table of Tomorrow's Publishing for the weekend. Cool. So that'll be great. I can't wait for that. It's something I've wanted to do. I've wanted to do for a very, very long time. So
cool. Very should cool. be fun.
Yeah,
should be fun.
What about you, John?
Same old, same old. Got the weekly comic spotlight still going strong. I've got to read a couple things for the next one we're going to record. I got to read Superman, Wonder Woman number 1, Captain America number 12, and then Triple Helix number 1 from IDW. It's the John Byrne title there. I got the preview spotlight and stuff going. Still want people to send in clips for that. Was working with Derek Royal. We're thinking about doing a panel at the Austin Comic Con. It's the Wizard World Austin. So we put in the request or form or whatever we got to fill out saying, hey, we'd like to do this. We'll see if they come back saying yes or no on that. Either way, I'm going to go to the convention. Should be fun. It's a good local show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Same old, same old.
Cool.
So that pretty much do it.
That'll do it, John. Thanks a lot. This has been great. We've always been doing this for years and years, and it's fun, man. I like doing this. We don't say it often, but yeah, it's a lot of fun doing this month to month. So it's always something to talk about.
Oh, yeah, always something to talk about. It's interesting. Some of the times it's same old of, yeah, Marvel and DC are on top. It's like I expect that. But other times there's some big surprises. Again, a 4,000-unit gap between the number one and two spots. That's fun to see and see Image do so strong. You know, it's interesting to see how much stays the same and how much changes. It's cool.
Mm-hmm.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the monthly question. The Diamond Order Index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or a few scanned items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath logic and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.